In 1987, Congress passed the Nuclear Waste Policy Act amendments that made Yucca Mountain, Nevada, the only disposal site to be considered for the nation's first geologic repository for spent nuclear fuel and high-level nuclear waste. Since that time, the state of Nevada has employed independent scientific and legal experts. These experts and others conclude that the Yucca Mountain project is dangerously unsafe. It was created for political, not technical reasons. In 2008, the agency responsible for the project, the Department of Energy, submitted a license application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The Department of Energy filed a motion with the NRC to withdraw the license application and end the project in 2010, but DOE's motion was denied by the NRC. Later, in 2011, the NRC suspended licensing for lack of sufficient funds. In 2013, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit ordered a resumption of licensing. Congress has not appropriated money for the project since 2011. Since that time, the U.S. has been locked in a stalemate.
Hello there, I'm Jay Sochita, and joining me today is Dr. Fred Dilger, the Executive Director of Nevada's Agency for Nuclear Projects. He has decades of experience and training in the field of nuclear waste policy. Now, I wanted to get some more background on this project. You have decades of experience working on the nuclear waste issues, including from the state of Nevada's perspective. Now, why do you believe that the biggest barrier to solving the U.S. nuclear waste problem is institutional and political rather than purely technical?
We understand most of the technical issues related to nuclear waste disposal. Many other countries are making solid progress towards solving their problem. The United States' problem is much larger than other countries, but at the same time, the United States has failed over the course of many decades to solve this problem, and it always seems to fall apart at the same place. And it's our institutions and the specific problem of the state and federal government interface. As an engineering problem, it's very, very challenging, but it's also understood and identified. There's also a lot of international experience. So the technical obstacles are important, but they're not impossible and they're not unknown. And so that's what has to be resolved going forward. We have to find a way to get our institutions to deliver answers or to deliver results in this very complex problem.
Thank you. And going over the historical lessons of what we can learn about this in the United States, the Lyons, Kansas story is less well known than Yucca Mountains. What key lessons from Senator Bob Dole's involvement and the eventual abandonment of that site should today's policymakers remember when approaching new repository efforts?
It is the first case where the federal-state conflict flared up. He saw that this was a very complex social problem. He likened it to the moon landing and said that finding a nuclear waste repository was much more complex than landing on the moon, which was a purely technical issue. State officials had one opinion about the location. The federal officials had another opinion, and there became really very serious conflict between the two. And what he did in Lyons, Kansas, example, the Atomic Energy Commission, the agency that was implementing the Lyons, Kansas program, failed to take into consideration state-level concerns about the repository, its design and implementation and that kind of thing. And that led to growing opposition and resentment, and ultimately led Senator Dole to cut off funding for the program, which was abandoned. Now, these kind of state and federal disagreements have characterized the United States nuclear waste program ever since that time in the late 70s.
All right, thank you. And you've emphasized that America's federalist system makes forced siting nearly impossible. Now, how does this compare to more centralized countries, and why has the Screw Nevada Bill approach been such a persistent failure?
A signal difference between the United States and other nations is that states in the United States have tremendous power under our Constitution. And the way we allocate power amongst the states ultimately makes it very hard to have a long-duration program like this, multi-generational really, that will survive a failed political consensus. And so the challenge for the United States is to create a program that can obtain and maintain a political consensus across multiple generations. In other countries, there aren't any states, or the equivalents of the states do not have the same kind of political power. And so they've been able to move forward much more easily. But this is a key distinction between the United States and other countries, and it's often why a lot of the lessons learned from other countries just can't be applied here.
Thank you. And many countries like Finland with Onkalo narrowing operation, Sweden and Canada have made progress with voluntary consent-based approaches. What specific elements of their models do you think would translate best to the United States context, and what unique American challenges do they face?
Well, the first issue, of course, is that they have obtained consent from the folks who are going to be most impacted by it. And this was something that the 1987 Nuclear Waste Policy Act amendments did not get. The idea was that every other kind of site would be excluded and only the Yucca Mountain site would be considered. And this understandably was viewed as unfair by many legislators at the time. And it was seen ultimately as a kind of an insult to not just Nevada, but also the system. So that kind of a backdoor deal was never going to be sustainable. In other countries, they've obtained the consent of the people most affected, living closest to the actual repositories, and they've done this over a long period of time. So the first lesson is to garner support. In the United States, it's more challenging because you have to have local support, you have to get state support. And then you have to build a consensus in the national legislatures to actually act on this in an effective way. We have 91,000 metric tons of spent nuclear fuel in the United States, so the problem is very sizable and much larger than other nations. At the same time, I believe there is a path forward, and I believe we can solve this problem.
All right, thank you. And I wanted to talk about the negotiator role. You advocate reviving something like the Office of the Nuclear Waste Negotiator that existed briefly in the early 1990s, with figures such as David Leroy and Richard Stallings. Now, why did that office ultimately falter, and how would you structure a revised version to be more effective today?
One of the key interfaces is between the state and Congress. So we need someone that can make a deal effectively, and that's where the Nuclear Waste Negotiator can land. In the case of the original two negotiators, they'd done amazing work, even though it was a part-time position for them. And it came apart because of a misunderstanding. And the way to set up a new negotiator's office would be to make it full-time, get it staffed properly, and then ensure that the people leading it can effectively speak with both the states that are interested in a repository and with Congress to come up with a workable solution that both sides can rely on going forward. And I think that's the way you get to consent.
Thank you. And building off of that, your paper outlines an 11-step phased process for states and localities to evaluate hosting a repository. Now, walk us through why this level of structure and transparency is necessary and how it addresses past failures in building public trust.
Well, first, let me say it's a suggested process, and it is not an automatic worked out blueprint. In my opinion, when we do get to a repository solution, it will be unique to the needs of that state and its time. So our 11 steps are simply to highlight the very many moving pieces in this and how they will necessarily fit together. For example, the fundamental requirement is for a governor to assign a consent agreement that would allow a repository to move forward. What does that consent agreement consist of? When are those things going to be produced and how do they land on the governor's desk? And then what incentive does a governor have to implement this and sign the agreement? One of the things that we have to consider is we're asking an awful lot of an elected official to permanently occlude a piece of his state from any kind of future use. And we should recognize that this is not something that's easily done, and it's not something that's going to be popular, and it's not something that's going to be without challenges. So having a kind of a worked out, thoughtful view of how the moving parts that we understand right now and can see based on the past and the existing licensing framework is going to be very helpful going forward.
All right, thank you. And speaking of which, There's definitely economic incentives to push this forward. Hosting a repository involves long-term land use changes and potential stigma. Now, you propose a sovereign wealth fund with substantial, flexible benefits for the host states and localities. How large would such incentives realistically need to be, and how could Congress be convinced to fund them from general revenues rather than the Nuclear Waste Fund?
Okay, this is an important aspect of the problem. The Office of the Nuclear Waste Negotiator would be the one making that deal. That's the whole idea, that there has to be someone who is an advocate for the state and an advocate for fixing this problem. In terms of the money that we're discussing, it's really not that much in the context of a multi-trillion dollar budget. And spending that money, creating a sovereign wealth fund that goes to the state that Congress cannot touch, is probably one of the key incentives that any state would look for and should look for, frankly, in my opinion. But let me make a broader point here. This isn't a monetary exchange and it can't be viewed that way. There has been an enormous amount of thought that has gone into how a state would prepare for this kind of agreement to be implemented. And so it isn't just an exchange of cash. It would involve health baseline surveys. It would involve extensive community interactions. And a very thoughtful, phased approach is needed to make this work. It cannot just be a, here's the big check with your name on it, or that will not be sustainable over a long period of time. It's going to take 100 years to build this repository, and we need a program that can last that long.
Absolutely. Thank you. Now, you mentioned earlier that there's over 90,000 metric tons of spent fuel scattered across dozens of states, mounting taxpayer liabilities and growing interest in new nuclear power. Now, how urgent is this issue in 2026? And could the lack of a disposal solution actually slow or derail the nuclear renaissance?
Well, I think it's doing that already. I think that the industry understands this, and they know that the waste problem must be solved, and it's got to be solved in a manner that is consistent with our political system, and that it's time to move on from where we were at and do something immediate so that first that we can begin emptying the reactor pools, the fuel pools, and emptying the interim storage facilities that are out there now. Some of the reactor pools are very filled up now. The other aspect of this is the race for more energy and cheaper energy. Energy prices are going way up. We have to have more energy faster for less money. Nuclear offers the promise of that. And moving the waste, solving the waste problem is critical for ensuring that investors are willing to spend money and invest money in projects that they know will have a finite endpoint to them. One of the issues is that when you have waste on site, it creates a constant liability, financial liability, for the company operating the nuclear power plant. And we've got to fix that. And by fixing that, this opens the pathway for more energy, which we badly need.
Thank you. And you've done extensive work on spent nuclear transportation risks. How should transportation factor into consent-based siting process, and what practical steps, like shipping the oldest fuel first, could reduce real and perceived risks?
Well, there are many layers to this problem. There's the layer of geology, there's the layer of the transportation access, there's the layer of the social and political acceptability. The transportation aspect has often been overlooked with the notion that, well, we'll just move it anywhere you like. That's probably not realistic. So the site that is chosen will have to be something that has a relatively good degree, a stable degree of transportation access. I believe that there are ways to mitigate the transportation risks, and these are things that can be readily implemented. Shipping oldest fuel first, as much as possible, is a longstanding ambition of the state of Nevada, and we believe it would result in the lowest routine radiological dose during transit, and it reduces the potential for harm created by the waste in shipment, and it reduces its attractiveness as a target as well. So all of these things together, it goes back to your first question, this is not really a technical problem. This is something that we have to shape and manage through our institutions. And when we get there, we'll have a workable solution that we don't have right now.
Well, that's great to hear. And beyond the ideas in your paper, such as new managing entity like Nucor, what single most important reform do you think Congress or the administration should pursue right now to break the decades-long impasse? And what gives you hope that a solution is still possible?
Well, I think that there are a couple of really fast bulleted things that can be done. The first is to create a new management organization. The second is to create an office of the nuclear waste negotiator that can fix the state-federal interface or act as a conduit there, an effective conduit. And the third thing will be funding. When we get to a repository site characterization program, the funding has to be consistent and it has to be adequate for there to be an ongoing funding stream that will result in a successful site characterization program. We learned a lot from the Yucca Mountain project, and we're in the process of assembling some of those, working with some of the folks who have worked with us over the years. And what we want to do is we want to bring those lessons together and ensure that we get the best, fastest, high-quality site characterization that we possibly can in a way that will not cost an inordinate amount of money or take too long. So with all that together, I think there's a path forward. I think the United States needs a path forward. I think the nuclear industry needs a path forward. And so the ingredients are all there. They've been well known, studied for years. We know how to fix this. And it's a question of Congress going ahead and implementing a new act that will repair these problems.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Dilger. Is there anything else you would like to share today?
We're at a crossroads right now in terms of our energy supply and in terms of our future. The waste problem is an embarrassing failure that has not been fixed in decades. And it's time to repair this deficiency and take this problem off the nation's plate, so to speak, and move forward and fix it right away as fast as we can and open up the door for more energy.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
For more information, see the included show notes and the Nevada Agency for Nuclear Projects website at www.state.nv.us/nukewaste.